Hey folks, this is Rish Outfield. Oh, I remember what I'm doing now. This is technically the Rish Outcast, which is the one that I record in the car. But as you can hear, I'm not in the car. I'm actually at home, where it should be quieter. The audio should be a little cleaner. I was answering Tom Tancredi's lengthy Q&A email. And I looked at the time, and it was time for me to go to work. I realized that I had been talking for a half an hour and I hadn't gotten through the questions yet. And so I thought, well, let's end here and we will pick up next time. And, you know, you turn one episode into two. It's a crime, you know. Look at the Hobbit movies. But here I am doing it. I've become, say it with me, kids, what I most despise. I didn't feel comfortable talking for an hour about myself on my own podcast. Isn't that weird? But I thought if I split it into two, maybe it would be a little bit more bearable. If not, you know, pick me up next week, next month, and I will... That was my stomach making that noise. I promise to have a story for you then. And so here we are, the second half of the questions. You'll hear me do a very bad, low-pitched voice for Tom's questions, and then my own answers. And then I'll meet you here on the other side. Then we'll pick up where we left off back in February of 2015. And maybe I'll throw in one more thing. Take care.
14. Regarding vices, what's your vice of choice? Gambling, drinking, overeating, etc.
I'm not really a drug guy, though I think cocaine would be nice, and maybe helpful to my particular set of weaknesses. Drinking makes me feel sorry for myself, and I really hate to lose control and or memory. Gambling would be fun if I were any good at it. I used to go to Vegas a lot and would waste money on slots or draw poker or roulette or blackjack. I'd set some limit, you know, like $20, $30, something like that. And I would always hit it really early, you know, run out of that $20 or $30. And then I'd just sit around, smelling that grotesque casino / ashtray smell. My sister and brother-in-law used to go play poker for money every week or more. And I went with them a couple of times and pretty much never had fun. Yeah, it got too competitive and people got loud and I had no poker face. And I barely knew any of these people. This was when I had little money. But I lost every single time. And that wouldn't be fun now, when I'm making literally dollars a month with my audiobooks, but was worse when every penny counted. I ought to try again, though, since it's at least socializing, something I rarely get around to anymore. I have a Pepsi addiction. Does that count? I've drank a Pepsi every day for, I don't know, the last 1,000 days or more. If I don't drink it, I get bad headaches. And people throw up their hands saying, "Don't you see? That's what a drug addiction is like. You need to stop drinking Pepsi before you end up at Betty Ford." But hey, if drinking a 30-cent soda, which I love, is all it takes to not get a headache, I'll drink two. I like food. Oh, and I've been lucky in that I'm not a snob about food. People gag and bitch about how bad McDonald's food is, or how Taco Bell isn't real Mexican food, or how Little Caesars pizza is the worst of the worst. But I love it all, especially Little Caesars. That there's a place you can go and order a pepperoni pizza for only $5 strikes me as a modern miracle, something to tell the grandkids. And when people say, "Oh, it's not good pizza," well, they don't know what bad pizza is, boys and girls. I've eaten pizza where they used ketchup instead of tomato sauce, and tomato slices because they look like pepperoni. To say Little Caesars is bad is like complaining that you could only get Hermione Granger to go to the Yule Ball dance with you. I know I've missed the point of this question. Sorry. I am fond of porn, though. I wish I could have been a screenwriter of that.
15. What movie would you make if you had $100 million budget?
Comic book properties are really, really easy to get made right now. And I would love to be able to work on, you know, as a writer, either a Power Pack movie or a Captain Marvel, you know, aka Shazam movie. Both of them have two things in common. You know, the first is kids. Power Pack was a comic book in the 80s. About four children, between the ages of, say, 4 and 10, who get superpowers and become heroes despite being little kids. It was the ultimate in escapist fantasy, if you were too young to relate to Peter Parker, who was by then post-college age. Plus, the pack had really visual powers. Now, Captain Marvel was a superhero developed in the 30s, who was basically Superman. I mean, so much so that money-hungry national periodicals, i.e. DC Comics, sued Fawcett Comics in the 50s and won the publishing rights to everything involving him. Now, he's got the powers of a bunch of legendary heroes and historic figures. But the real hook of Shazam, as most people know him today, since money-hungry Marvel Comics trademarked the name Captain Marvel, is that in reality, he's a little boy, Billy Batson, who can transform himself into a super-powered adult by invoking the magic phrase Shazam. That an 8 or 10-year-old boy could suddenly not just become a grown-up, but the most powerful grown-up imaginable sounds like the perfect childhood escapist fantasy to me. So those are the projects I would want to develop slash write. Oh, and the other thing they have in common, I've never read a single Power Pack or Shazam comic. So I may technically not know jack about those two properties. 16.
If all societal problems were on the table and you could solve just one of them, which one would you solve?
Peas and rice, Mr. Tancredi. I'm a doctor, not a philosopher. And I'm not even actually a doctor. Probably, I'd want to fix vertical video syndrome. VVS is when people shoot video footage holding their camera phones vertically instead of horizontally, which gives you a tall, skinny picture, which is fine when shooting a Wilt Chamberlain sex tape, but not only loses anything on the sides, but is scrunched to the middle section of a screen when viewed on a computer or television. Tabloid shows and news coverage has begun airing these abominations as provided fan footage, but it really has to stop. Right now. Say no to old Mila Kunis. Look, I'm only a soapboxer when it comes to entertainment, or the English language. I understand that there are folks that really hate gays, or blacks, or Muslims, or fatties, or smart people, or Jews, or Mexican immigrants, or atheists, or the elderly, or contortionists with multiple piercings in an open relationship with their own twins. And they feel really passionately about it. I can't fix all that shite. I can't even stop people from getting ear gauges, or girls getting pixie cuts, or convincing people to put commas in their sentences, or not buying little outfits for their pets. I can only fix myself, really. I can try a little harder. I can have a more open mind. I can't make you drive safer, but I can always signal and always check my mirrors and, though this is going to make me sound like a senior citizen, always drive at a responsible speed. And that does, admittedly, very little to help society. But it does something. So I'm a selfish person, lonely and misunderstood, but ultimately self-centered and solipsistic, which means the same thing, but is a fancy word to show you I went to college once. This world is really effed up, and people would rather scream about whose matches they were when the house burns around them than look for an extinguisher or a sink or just a blanket to throw around their heads. I am not political. And whenever I start to be, depression comes knocking, seeing how little just one person can actually accomplish, Not with the way things work, or rather don't work, in America today. Now, you don't want me feeling depressed now, do you?
17. Does your writing have a mission to it? Are you exploring a specific idea?
No mission that I know of. Big has mentioned that my stories are always about lonely geeks or nerds or outsiders. And yeah, my autobiographical tales usually are. Write what you know and all that. But I think I manage more than just that. You know, I also write about children and old men. So there's my trinity, I suppose. Thing is, every writer knows what it's like to be an outsider, a loner, or the one who stands outside the pack, looking around, realizing they don't quite belong. It may be that Neil Gaiman can have sex with any supermodel he wants to, any time he wants to, but A, I doubt it. And B, I'll bet he spent a great number of years being that guy who didn't get invited to the popular table, who sat down at his keyboard and waggled his fingers while the people he knew were out playing pool and waggling their fingers on bra straps while the thump, thump, thump music pounded from the speakers, erasing entire weeks from their long-term memory. I find that certain writers are fixated on certain things. Like, for example, I remember groaning every time Dean Kuntz started describing the trees in the yard or the flowers in the garden in every one of his books. Or when John Grisham gets a bee in his bonnet about the injustices of the justice system. And I certainly have written more stories about poo than, well, most people. Pee and poo, I guess. I've always loved the story about the guy who tries to siphon the gas out of the family's motorhome and ends up siphoning the sewage tank instead. Or that story about the guy who soils himself on a date. And to cover it, he buys, like, a whole new outfit. And as the girl's back is turned, he tells the cashier that he only wants the pants, not the shirt. And so he gets on the train and he tosses his beshited pants out the window. A dubious plot point that never struck me as unlikely when I was a boy. Goes into the bathroom to put on his new pants, only to discover that the cashier only sold him the shirt, not the pants. I've written several scatological stories, as Big is fond of pointing out. And I remember somebody criticizing me about that on the Doonstief comments once, saying that it was childish and that I should grow up and stop because it was ruining my writing. And I don't believe I've written any of those since. Which is sad because, like the book says, everybody poops. What else? I like to write about fear and the little guy, and discovering that people are either friendly or interesting, and that they have a tale to tell. When my mother came to this country, her family was taken in by a bunch of generous strangers in Arizona, and that has impacted her outlook on life as much as anything could. She'll say at any opportunity, "You'll find that there are good people any place you go." And it's possible that my mindset has been affected by that too. Of course, the gospel truth that nice guys finish last has also affected my mindset. But let's focus on the positive. Just this once, eh?
18. What would make you want to quit artwork?
I think if I were no longer lonely and actually found happiness, then a lot of my desires to create characters and scenarios and wouldn't it be funny ifs would go away. In the same way that you get a dog or have another kid to keep your marriage together, or at least keep you from straying. Actually, I don't know what I'm talking about. I would want to write anyway. That never goes away. Even at times when I've been angry with screenwriting or podcasting or storytelling, I still want to do it and think about scenarios over and over again. Here's an example. Every Wednesday night, I drive up to my friend Jeff's house. He lives way up on a hillside overlooking the whole valley. And from his office window, you can see all the way to Elysium. But it takes almost an hour to get there. And the last 20 minutes is up, up, up the mountain, which is fine. Although my car did overheat and break down trying to get up there one August afternoon. But it's the coming down when all is dark and usually cold, and the car, because of the angle, wants to go about a zillion miles per hour. Please disregard my early statement about driving responsibly, I suppose. And I have to ride the brake the whole trip down. Often, and I mean often, with a capital O, there will be deer in the road, either crossing, walking alongside, or just hanging out, wanting, it seems, to get in front of your car, my car. One time it was elk, which are creatures so big you'd think they were horses with horns. But every time, and we're talking dozens or hundreds of times by now, that I go down that hill and see, or nearly hit, members of the deer family, I think to myself, what if it wasn't a deer? What if it was something else? So for over 100 trips now, I have played the following scenario over in my mind. Stupid car, Trey growled as the vehicle in the opposite lane flashed its brights at him. Trey didn't have his high beams on, so the other driver was just being a douche. Because Trey was going pretty fast, he didn't have the chance to bright the other car back, or honk, or anything. He just plunged along the unlit country road, seething at that driver, now just a pair of red taillights fading behind him. Why would somebody do that? He remembered hearing in his childhood about some gang orientation, where the would-be member drove around with his brights on, and the first car that flashed their lights at him was his target to kill. But he'd also heard that that was an old wives' tale, and dismissed it as irritating fear-mongering today. So, what else could it have been? A warning, maybe? That Trey's own lights weren't on? He did check, but his were fine, and they certainly weren't on the bright setting. Maybe the other driver had been trying to warn him about a policeman up ahead, in that speed trap where the road straightened out for a mile. Or maybe there was an accident up ahead. The more Trey thought about it, the more he worried that the other driver was trying to tell him something. Something important. He found himself slowing way down. After all, it was very dark out here in the country, and sometimes there was flooding, and sometimes an animal wandered onto the road. Trey slammed on his brakes. Up the way, something was moving from the left lane to the right. A large creature with horns and claws walking on its hind legs. He was going slow enough now to stop in time, and the creature glared at him as it finished crossing, its yellow eyes luminous in his headlights. Stupid boogeyman, Trey growled. Now that is something I wrote down going on 5 years ago, and I still think about it every week or so. It's my imagination, I guess, or a premonition or something. But I sometimes chide myself for thinking about it when I see a moving black shape on the road ahead of me, because it's a thought I'm super tired of, and yet it reruns like an I Love Lucy episode. God, I hate that story. But God, am I fascinated by that image. I think that if I stopped writing, for whatever reason, that the stupid boogeyman syndrome would happen not just once late Wednesday nights, but every single day. Until I ultimately resorted to emptying my head with cheap booze or a meat cleaver. I've always been a writer, even when I don't write, mate.
19.
What was that? Was there some kind of accent there?
19. What do you...
See, that's an accent.
What do you find gratifying in your craft?
See, that doesn't sound anything like Tom Tancredi.
What do you find gratifying in your craft?
Ooh, there you go. I get to be powerful, sir. I get to be the storyteller. I get to be center of attention. My writing is for myself. Which sounds arrogant, but what the hey. And it's darn fulfilling. I guess it's a masturbatory thing, a comparison I've made before, which never fails to repel those around me. But it's a release. It's a private, solo activity, and what it provides is escape. Escape from the mundane, escape from the daily grind, escape from loneliness, or feelings of inadequacy, or contemplation of my failings, escape from just being an also-ran and making me someone important and powerful and brilliant and scary and smooth and popular and at the top of my game. Escape from, well, escape from the planet of the apes, I suppose. In that writer's conference I went to, that I mentioned how many times? I don't know, since I've responded to this email over a period of, what, weeks? One of the panelists said, "Listen to me. There is no feeling in life as satisfying, as good, as finishing a novel. I've had sex with people and been high on all sorts of drugs, and neither one of those is as thrilling as that feeling when you get to the end of a book." Now, I don't mind telling you that his words, and the whole panel in general, which was about writing your first novel, really made me want to write a whole book. Something I've always been too daunted to actually go for. I like podcasting. I like drawing. And I like doing audiobooks. But those aren't my end-all, be-all activities. No, that's writing, both stories and screenplays. That's what I wish I were doing right now. Although, between you and me, this feels like writing. Talking about myself like this for hours on end. So I appreciate you giving me this forum. Though I doubt you really expected me to go on and on like this, like the freaking end of Return of the King. I'm not the greatest writer in the world. No. But I've written things I'm really, really proud of. And when that works, when the words are flowing and my thoughts are somehow, magically, transformed into words, I feel like I am the master of all I survey. Or at least somebody whose head is visible above the crowd, rather than getting trampled by it. 20. If you had to sum it up with song, what's the song and why? One of my favorite songs is "I Don't Like Mondays" by the Boomtown Rats. And that's what I was going to cite here, just for the opportunity to talk about the history of that song again. But no, what I said just now is making me go a different way. You know that song "Fast Car" by Tracy Chapman? It's from the late 80s, and it's been called by many the saddest song of all time. I'll admit that I didn't get it when it first came out. I was just too young, and it bugged me that I couldn't tell if Chapman was a man or a woman. Which reminds me, there was a married couple in my little town, and both the husband and the wife were named Tracy. Heck, they ought to move to Tracy, Arizona, where my story Overtaken takes place. But one day, years later, I heard the song as an adult. And wham! The song hit me like a ton of bricks. In it, Chapman sings from the point of view of a poor woman from the projects, way over on the wrong side of town, who had all these dreams of a hopeful future. And then her mother abandoned the family, and Chapman quit school to take care of her drunken, worthless father. She's got a boyfriend, and she remembers that when she rode alongside him in his fast car, she suddenly forgot her lot in life and felt like she could be someone. The song goes on. She has these plans to finally see what it means to live. And we see her boyfriend slash husband is a worthless, irresponsible tool too. But Chapman remembers that fast car. And in the end, it gives her the strength to get out of that dead-end situation and try to make one last chance at a better life. So it ends on a hopeful note, at least. But the thing that always gets me about the song is that the chorus is so positive, but it's in the past tense. She's remembering how hope felt before now. Holy crow, it's depressing. Do you know the song? The chorus goes, "Remember when we were driving in your car, speed so fast I felt like I was drunk. City lights laid out before us and your arms felt nice wrapped round my shoulder, and I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone. Have you ever felt like a nobody? Like a failure? Like you took a bad turn somewhere along the way and now you're way too far along to correct things. I think most people can appreciate that feeling. But I think everybody, be they Prince William, or Taylor Swift, or Stephanie Meyer, or Lee Harvey Oswald, has known what it was like to want to be someone, to be special, to be appreciated, to be more than they are, whether they ever get there or not. So that's the song I picked, knowing I have no idea what it's like to be poor and black and a woman and with a deadbeat husband or father, or to have Tracy Chapman's problem of having dumb kids not know if she was a man or a woman. Man, this has been an overshare. I guess I can't do these things half-assed. That's both a strength and a weakness for me. I hope there's some enjoyment in reading this huge essay, this deepish glimpse into my mind. If you didn't like it, well, I guess I got something out of it, at least. There you go. All right, I appreciate you listening to that. This is me back in the car again, as you can tell from the loud noise. Thank you for listening to that. I hope that was entertaining to you, or informative, or both, or whatever it is. We still have a little bit of time. I'm going to see Big. It's a Monday. We tend to get together on Monday nights. And I had a little bit of ramblings about creativity that I wanted to share with you. We'll see. If the credits run right now, then you'll find out that I had nothing that I wanted to share with you. But thank you for listening to the Rish Outcast. It is a solo thing that I do. But if you respond to it, if you enjoy it, please mention that. Let me know. And that will help ensure that I do more of them. I've got a lot of things clamoring for my attention. And if I know that somebody out there cares about this particular show, then it'll move up on the priority list. You know how these things are. Anyway, goodbye.
For your information, the podcast you have just suffered through was produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. That little bit of knowledge just might save your life.
Bonus question. Why, I don't know.
Where is my book?
That's your bonus question? You've misplaced your book, sir. You know why? Because I've seen dumps that are more organized than this. There could be a dead Ethiopian child in this pile of garbage, and you would never, ever know it. Oh, there he is. I see his legs. Oh, poor guy. Anyway, you were going to do a bonus question? Okay. Bonus question. Why did episode 1 have, like, 13 questions, and episode 2 had 7 questions? Wouldn't it have been smarter to split it in 2 right in the halfway point? Yeah, it would have. I have no idea how that happened or why that happened. When I went to edit the second half, I was shocked that it was so much shorter. Anyway, sorry. Any more questions? Maybe later. Okay. If you're listening to the show and you have questions, feel free to send them to me and I will maybe do another episode in the future where I answer listener questions. And I guess that's it. Sorry the episode is short. Sorry it even exists. Nah, I'm not that sorry. Well, a little bit sorry. I'm somewhere in the scale between not sorry at all and somewhat sorry. Goodbye.
And now, what is this?
She was very thin and clearly smoked, since through the open door and hole where the screen used to be, a smoke smell wafted over them. Andor again introduced all three of them as she stood there, nodding.
Are you Denise Miller? Lot asked.
I am, she said, nodding.
You own that van?
Lot asked, pointing at the van. She shook her head and took a deep breath, clearly finding a way to center and ground herself, as all good detectives could do. In fact, without that training, more than likely she'd just be sitting on the sidewalk right now. And from what he could tell from Roger's eyes, the place was clearly lived in and seldom cleaned. Denise patted her son's arm, clearly understanding that he was having some trouble with all this, as they carried out the boxes from Denise Miller's house to his car through the warming. As they carried out the boxes from Denise Miller's house to his car through the warming morning lar. Fuck. Through the morning warming air. Through the warming morning air. As they carried out the boxes from Denise Miller's house to his car through the warming morning air. Andor said.
Went about a half mile in toward town.
Cops were notorious for not eating well, and clearly the three of them weren't that concerned, even after decades of being in the field. Lot glanced back at her, then said, More than likely, he had gotten hung up at the DMV. He clearly had had the ability to remember who he was with at any time and keep his stories and different lives straight. But he clearly hadn't lived long enough to even know that Jane was coming along. She moved up behind Lot's white Cadillac. She moved up behind Lot's white Cadillac as he climbed out and opened the back hatch. Clearly this wasn't anywhere near the first time he had done something like this. Nodding, clearly relieved. He asked, clearly worried, as she would have been in his spot. But clearly he hadn't seen much of it. She was clearly as surprised as he was about how much money they were driving past. I'm going to redo that line. That sucks. She clearly was proud of her daughter, and clearly hadn't been hiding her from him in any fashion, but that was clearly not the case. For heaven's sake, he drove a 3-year-old van with a dent in the door. Three? Julie glanced around. Isn't it Julia? Not Julie. Julia could see a number of obvious security cameras, and more than likely, there were a few not so obvious. Kate took a deep breath, clearly lost in memory. Clearly Stan's brother didn't know about any of this with his younger brother. Clearly in shape and more than likely. Kate took a deep breath and leaned forward, clearly gathering herself. It tasted like heaven as far as he was concerned. Julia knew that more than likely the governor's wife had told him to bring them in. She had her dark brown hair pulled back off her face, and clearly she had spent time in the sun. She handed the paper to Carl, who studied it, clearly shocked. The governor's wife clearly didn't have it, since, if she had, clearly she also was concerned about something getting in the way of what was growing between them. She more than likely should stop thinking of Stan as her former husband. Lot stared at Rogers, who clearly didn't seem to be bothered by it. Those wonderful dark eyes of his clearly worried about her. Now it was Lot's turn to jerk. Now it was Lot's turn to jerk. Now it was Lot's turn to jerk. She clearly hadn't cared that much. And from what he had seen of her, it was very clear to Lot this man had not been circumcised in any fashion. More than likely, this case was still bothering her as well. Lot could hear the sounds of a poker room in the background. More than likely, she had joined. Two more than likelies in a paragraph? More than likely, he had. Lot glanced over at her, clearly worried. Julia looked over. There's another Julie. Clearly puzzled as to why Rogers was now taking the news so well. And more than likely, if he had even told me what he was doing, I'd have booted his ass down the road sooner than I was doing.
More than likely from a rifle at fairly close range.
That is really crappy. I mean, wow, craptacular.
I had a feeling that I belonged, and I had a feeling I could be someone, I could be someone, I could be someone.